Maine people helping each other through tough times. One of the most powerful aspects of the COVID-19 pandemic has been a positive one. The overwhelming number of creative ways people and businesses are stepping up to help one another, especially here in Maine. From people who have pledged to donate their stimulus check, to others shopping for their housebound neighbors, factories retooled to manufacture personal protective equipment, restaurants donating food. The list is too long for one sentence or even one hour-long program, but we're going to try. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn about the myriad ways people are reaching out to make a meaningful difference in their communities. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It is not all bad news out there. In response to the pandemic, people all over Maine have been figuring out what they can do to help each other get through this crisis. And today we will highlight some of those efforts. Joining me for the hour is Philip Walsh. He is Executive Director of Maine Initiatives. We will also be hearing from a number of others involved in creative and helpful efforts around the state. Also, we always want to hear from you. What is happening in your community? Any examples of people helping one another or finding creative solutions to the problems they see around them? Do you need help and you don't know where to turn? Whatever the case, we would love to hear from you. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, post a comment to our Facebook page or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Phil, thanks so much for joining us for this hour. I know that all over Maine, people are coming up with ways to meet the needs of those around him, but this is what you were focused on even before the pandemic. Tell us about your organization, Maine Initiatives, and what it sets out to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Jennifer. Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on Maine Calling. And before I talk a little bit about Maine Initiatives, I just want to thank you all for the great work and programming you've been doing. In this moment, Maine Public really feels like a thread that's keeping us all stitched together while we're choosing to stay apart for our safety. So I know in my house, Maine Public and Maine Calling is appointment listening right now. So thank you. And Maine Initiatives, we are a public community-based foundation. We raise money from the community and make grants to organizations that are working on issues of justice and equity here in Maine. So far this year, we have made $646,000 in grants to 55 organizations that are doing incredible work on the front lines of this crisis. A little bit about our grantee partners. They are organizations that are primarily led by and serving people of color and in the community. They're doing two things. They're both providing direct services, ensuring that people have access to housing and food and health care in the community. They're also doing critical organizing and advocacy to ensure that all Mainers' needs are being met in this moment. And taking a longer view, they're advocating for what kind of community we want and what we want our community to look like moving forward. So that's a little bit about what we're doing and the organizations that we're supporting are doing.
Phil, tell us what you're hearing from donors right now. What are some of the stories that people have told you as they've made the contributions in the last few weeks?
Yeah, it's a great question. We have about 475 individuals around the state that have made donations to support our work and to support our grantee partners, essentially. And what we're hearing from people is that they really feel a sense of solidarity right now, that they know that there are individuals in our state that are suffering more disproportionately because of COVID-19. I think what we hear and what we understand is that if something is wrong in our society, like a crisis, like a pandemic, it goes more wrong for people who have been pushed to the margins. I guess the situation is bad for all of us, it is worse for some of us. And COVID-19 is a perfect example for people to understand this, not to support the people who are disproportionately impacted. And that's the immigrant community, the indigenous community, black and brown folks in our community. So people are reaching out and stepping up and wanting to support them.
Well, Phil, thanks so much for that. I'm going to see if maybe we can have you call back because your phone seems to be cutting in and out a little bit. We'll go to another couple calls and reconnect with you. I'm going to go to Jay, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you? Thanks so much for the show today.
Of course. Tell us about your organization.
So I am the Community Center Director for Pathway Vineyard Church in the Brunswick site. We also have a site in Lewiston. And the Lewiston site, our focus has been to partner with other agencies that are doing great work instead of just recreating the wheel. So the Lewiston site is partnering with St. Mary's program there to produce meals that can go out for lunches, hundreds of them a week. So the St. Mary's folks give them the supplies. We use the manpower to put them together and then return them as kits to go back out to the public that needs them. And then over in Brunswick, we had been doing a community meal where we provided like restaurant style, super high dignity environment for about 80 people a week. And with our partnership with Good Shepherd Food Bank and Midcoast Hunger Prevention, we knew that when COVID hit, we needed to reimagine that because they just couldn't come in and sit with us for a good meal. So we converted entirely to a ready-to-heat instead of ready-to-eat meal program where we put them in those bento plastic to-go boxes. And we have gone from producing about 80 meals a week to nearly 400 meals every single week so that folks can enjoy a good, healthy meal and do that in a safe environment. And since the COVID issue started 7 or 8 weeks ago, we have reached a plateau of almost 4,000 meals produced for our community. So for us, it's just a matter of reimagining how to help without reinventing what other folks are doing really well and then really communicating well and leveraging the partnerships to the agencies that exist.
And Jay, let me ask you this. If someone wants to either help your organization or wants to receive meals from you, where does one go to sign up?
That's fantastic. Our facility in Brunswick has ready-to-heat meals and a drive-through setting every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. We also do delivery programs to Tedford Housing, which is the homeless prevention center in Brunswick. We provide drop-off meals to several senior low-income housing facilities in Brunswick. Also, the congregants of our church, we have a dedicated program called the Pathway Mission Initiative, which you can find out about on our website at pathwayvineyard.com. And all of those donations are targeted directly to reducing financial and hardship issues in the state of Maine. So that's a really good way to learn more about what we're doing to help our folks and our neighbors around us.
All right, Jay, I'm going to invite you and anybody else who calls in today to go to the Maine Calling Facebook page and under today's post, make a comment with any information, maybe contact information, and hopefully by the end of this hour, at the end of this day, this is going to be a great resource for people all over Maine. So thank you so much for calling in today with your suggestion and your information. We're going now to Sari Green, who's with Community of Kindness in South Portland. Sari, thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks, Jennifer, for having me. I appreciate it.
Tell me about the Community of Kindness and how it came to be.
Absolutely. So the South Portland Community of Kindness is a hyper-local Facebook group. We have almost 1,700 members. We started mid-March, and its original goal was to mobilize volunteers and to give voice to local organizations and individuals who needed assistance as we as a community navigate the impact of COVID-19. And it's just been such an amazing group, Jennifer. I mean, everything from answering the call for food cupboard volunteers and folks who are shopping for each other. A lot of folks have generously given away books and games and puzzles to each other, shared homeschool resources, a lot of organizing, mask making, making Easter baskets and donating hams, really just doing a lot of great outreach, both one-on-one and giving organizations a platform to connect with folks who need help and to gather more volunteers.
What would you tell others who might be interested in starting something like this in their community?
I think it's a fantastic platform to do it using Facebook. We set up a very clear mission that the group was to help each other. And so there's no fundraising that goes on. There's no extraneous posts. There's no political posts. And so we set very, very clear rules that you can see on our page. And then myself and the other admins have been pretty strict about adhering to those rules and making sure that only posts that are appropriate stay within that group so we can stay really focused on the mission. And it's also allowed us to sort of create these other initiatives, two really important initiatives that came out of this. One was the South Portland Housing Authority Delivery Brigade, where we ended up with a group of 40 volunteers specifically from this group who deliver meals to residents in the South Portland Housing Authority from the South Portland Food Cupboard. These are residents who are either without transportation at the moment or unable to venture out, as well as a Hi Neighbor program, which was door cards that were printed up, and people could put their names and phone numbers and distribute to neighbors that might be vulnerable as a way to connect them. So lots of ways you can take a group like this.
All right, Sari. And I'm hoping that you can put some information about your group, South Portland Community of Caring, on the Maine Calling Facebook page today. We're asking people to put things in the comment section of today's post. Thanks so much for calling in. And we do have Phil Walsh back with us. Thanks so much for calling back, Phil. And I wanted to ask you just a little bit more about the Maine initiatives. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you have seen in the last few weeks since the pandemic hit a surge in donations.
Yeah, absolutely. We have seen, I think, both a surge in donations and definitely a surge in need. The main, our donors have really stepped up incredibly. We've mobilized so far $217,000 from individuals in Maine that we are granting into the community and our foundation partners as well. We're members of the Immigrant and Refugee Funders Collaborative, and that's 13 foundations that specifically support immigrant-led organizations, and they have stepped up as well, mobilizing $250,000 to make emergency grants to immigrant-led organizations in the community. So it's been incredibly heartening for me to see the outpouring of support and assistance from Mainers, and not just directly to us in Maine Initiatives. I also want to mention a couple of mutual aid funds that we've seen that have emerged directly in response to this. One is the People's Emergency Fund that has been organized by Presente Maine, and that's providing direct assistance to individuals and giving priority to those who are most marginalized in this crisis and with least access to other forms of aid, including undocumented folks. And they've been able to raise a lot of money from small dollar donors, giving $5 and $10, and they're able to give that aid directly to individuals. And the same with the Estamos Aquí Fund, which is a fund for Latinx folks that was created by Mano and Mano, both funds that have raised a lot of money and are getting those funds directly into the hands of individuals who need it for housing, for food, and for other medicine and emergency costs.
All right. Well, thanks for that. Joining us on the line now, Emerson Gale, a musician and educator with Seven Stars Art Center in Vermont. But as you'll hear in a minute, it has a connection to Maine. Thanks so much for calling in, Emerson.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
You're focusing on musicians. How are musicians being affected by the pandemic? This is hitting that profession pretty hard, isn't it?
You know it. Yeah, we call it the great gig collapse. As musicians originally even helped create that term, the gig economy, and, you know, canceled tours. And a lot of folks, you know, who were touring, they didn't have students online, so they haven't been able to pivot to get students going that way. And so we realized in New England we had this opportunity to help rally folks together, help musicians get food on the table, pay rent bills, et cetera. And we banded together with a Maine native, who you may know, Jason Anik. He loves touring around in a lot of jazz trios these days. And we came up with the idea with a Vermont luthier and bow maker, hey, why not raffle off a violin and bow with the proceeds to go towards $250 mini grants for musicians in New England and now all over the U.S. and a few other countries as well.
And you're also working the Maine Fiddle Camp, I understand, right?
That's right. Yeah, actually, a lot of the music teachers at Maine Fiddle Camp have become part of the project. It's been this really incredible grassroots outpouring of support, especially from Maine and Vermont, New England music organizations. And excited to share that we just did hit our $50,000 goal yesterday, which means we're able to distribute aid to over 150 musicians. Already about that amount have got the money in their PayPal accounts, and we're hearing stories back, like this gentleman I was just speaking with who said, boy, that check arrived just in time. I was about to have to pawn off my music instruments. Or another one was saying, well, the storage unit is going to close down today, and they were going to confiscate all my equipment. So, again, yeah, big thank you to everyone who's, helped push this forward. And now we have a week left for the raffle and about $28,000 left to go to cover all the remaining musician applicants who have urgent need.
Wow, that's really wonderful. Congratulations, Emerson. Before we let you go, what are some of the other ways that you think people can help musicians during this crisis?
Hey, thanks for that. So there is a variety of ways to support musicians online. As you may know, there's some really wonderful live stream festivals going on, like the Stay at Home Festival, organized by some of our musician aid recipients. And there's also ways to take online classes. You can hear them live and use PayPal tip jar. And also, if you want to contribute to these musician aid mini grants, anyone is welcome to go online at go.rallyup.com/musician aid, go.rallyup.com/musician aid. And you're welcome to also contribute there to help our remaining musicians in need through the mini grant process. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for calling in. That's Emerson Gale. He's a musician and a teacher. Going to read some emails that have come in. An email from Kristen. Sewing Masks for Maine is an all-volunteer mask sewing network focused on donating to healthcare providers. We just surpassed 10,000 masks delivered across the state. An email from My Teen Place Center. When COVID-19 hit our area, we adapted quickly to meeting the surging demand for food. In early March, we pivoted from our usual mission of providing year-round teen programming and established a daily mobile pantry for anyone of any age in Westbrook. Four staff are preparing 1,000 or more family-sized dinners and 150 snack kits per week. We're offering curbside pickup and also delivering dinners to local neighbors for drop-off house by house. We're also making wellness visits. This is a very dangerous time for some of our kids and parents, as they have no buffer from each other. Some of our kids already come from depleted homes during a normal economy, but now they have nowhere to go during this scarce economy. So we welcome your email to talk@mainpublic.org. Your phone number, 1-800, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email, talk@mainpublic.org. Again, you can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Dean's Sweets, now offering hand-dipped chocolate for Mother's Day. Pickup, delivery, and shipping available. DeansSweets.com. St. Lawrence Arts in Portland, wishing good health, safety, and well-being for everyone during this difficult time. StLawrenceArts.org. And Patriot Subaru, with a mission to serve customers, families, community, and each other. Learn more at PatriotSubaru.com.
Hello, I'm Mark Vogelsang, President and CEO of Maine Public. Even in extraordinary times, some things remain constant, and Maine Public's commitment to serving you is unwavering. We're expanding our educational resources to support our Maine kids at home, with Maine teachers offering new remote lessons on Maine Public Television. It's called The Learning Space. Our journalists are continuing to provide coverage of the pandemic, daily CDC briefings, deep dive conversations, and independent reporting. And of course, we're committed to providing classical music as a place of calm and respite from the stress we all feel, with companionship for you and expanded support for performers and organizations on radio and television. We're proud to do this essential work and proud to be listener-supported. We're here for you because you've been here for us. So from everyone here at Maine Public, thank you. You know, in times of crisis, public radio is needed more than ever, which is why I'm asking you to join me in supporting this one-of-a-kind service. Together, we can keep Maine connected and informed. Please make your donation today at mainepublic.org. Thanks very much.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, lots of examples and ideas for how people can help each other and their community in this time of need. Joining me for the hour, Phil Walsh, who is Executive Director of Maine Initiatives. We also have so many calls and emails coming in. We're going to get to as many as possible. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Phil, as we go through this program, we are realizing how many people are stepping up. People in Maine are always generous, but I'm wondering if you think that this is going to be a time in which there's a shift, in which there's going to be the after the pandemic, and as in contrast to the before, in terms of how we think about reaching out to our neighbors.
Yeah, I do think that we're at an inflection point, and I actually hope that we are. I mean, I think, if nothing else, this crisis is shining a light on the many ways that our communities are broken and the way that our structures and systems don't work for all Mainers. And I'm really encouraged by all of the different ways that people are stepping up and saying, we can influence positive change here, we can do things, we can take responsibility for ourselves and for our neighbors. And I hope those are some of the things that that don't go back to the way they were before, that we continue to build these threads of how we can be supportive of each other, how we can support mutual aid, and how we can advocate for policies and systems that are more just and more equitable for all Mainers. I mean, I think those are conversations that we're able to have right now that we weren't having 3 months ago or 6 months ago, and they're conversations that I'm excited about and that we're excited to support.
Calling in now is Roger Gilmartin. He is Vice President of Maine China Network in Bangor. Thanks for joining us, Roger.
Glad to be here, and good afternoon.
During this crisis, we've all learned how precious a commodity personal protective equipment, or PPE, is. What is your organization doing to address this?
Well, we've been heavily involved in tying sources of this kind of material to the people that need to have it, need to use it. The Maine China Network, through our contacts in China and so on, have been sourcing both N95 masks, KN95, excuse me, and face shields that we are funneling through a member of our community who was working as an ICU doctor at an Eastern Maine Medical Center. And we are only one of a group of Chinese community members in Maine who are all efforting the same effect. For example, this is our second fundraising event. The first one was closed out. We bought the materials and delivered them. This is the second fundraiser we're doing for the same purpose, because regardless of how many masks and so on you could source, the need is still much greater than the supply. The group of Chinese students at John Baps High School, for example, and their families procured about 1,900 KN95 masks. The Bangor Chinese School has also sourced thousands of masks that have been delivered. So we are all heavily invested in the community, from regardless of how we got here. We are in Maine, and as I say, public health concerns all of us.
Well, Roger, thank you so much for calling in. I invite you to put more information about the effort of the Maine China Network to raise the money to get more hospital-grade masks from China. That's Roger on our Facebook page. Roger Gilmartin with the Maine China Network. We'll go to Ellie, who's the founder of Cooking for Community. Hi, Ellie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me today, Jennifer.
Great. Tell us about your, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, thanks. Cooking for Community is a brand new initiative. We are in our fourth week of operation. We, in a nutshell, fund restaurants to to cook for people in need, currently in the greater Portland region. By the end of today, we have 7 restaurant partners, which will have produced over 4,300 healthy meals using locally sourced ingredients to be distributed to the hungry through our 9 social service agency partners.
So you're raising money and then paying restaurant workers and restaurants to make meals for people who need them.
That's exactly right. So the money that we raise actually goes to benefit multiple groups of people and businesses at the same time. We help restaurants keep their lights on. We help local growers and suppliers stay in business, and we keep people employed. And the end result is that we keep a lot more people fed with really healthy cooked meals, which is very hard for the great social service agencies in our area to produce at this point.
Oh, well, Ellie, thanks so much for calling in. Ellie founded Cooking for Community, and you know what I'm going to say. Please go on today's Facebook post and add your information to our comment section there. We're going to move to Henry, who's calling from Arundel. Hi, Henry. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for having me on the program. It's great to be here, and it's so valuable what you're doing, Jennifer. It's great. I just wanted to talk a little bit about what we down here in Arundel, there's so much need as there is everywhere, but there's also so many people in the community that want to help. So what I've been doing is working with organizations that I belong to, nonprofits and other community groups, and then hooking up with local food pantries to see what their need is and how we might help supply that. One of the groups I belong to is the Arundel Conservation Trust, and we're usually busy fundraising ourselves, but what we've done in this time is to take our organizing and fundraising skills and are organizing presently a community food drive for the Community Outreach Services food pantry, which actually helps the towns of Arundel, Kennebunk, and Kennebunkport. So we're busy with that, and our board members are going to have that happen on May 16th. On a more informal basis, I also belong to a local food co-op, so I've hooked up the food co-op with the Bitterford Food Pantry, and every member of the co-op puts in extra money, and we bulk buy from Maine supplier out of Crown of Maine, and any extras that we have, we order extra based on the extra cash that we got in, and we have been so far once we've donated that to the Bitterford Food Pantry. So that's a couple of ways that we've been working with existing organizations to get them to hook up to food banks in the area.
Well, Henry, thanks for calling in and joining our conversation and telling us what's going on down in Arundel. Joining us now, Shannon Hill, who is co-owner and meat maven at Maine Meat and Kittery. Thanks for calling in, Shannon. And I understand you've come up also with an interesting way to help out-of-work restaurant staff. What are you doing?
So we started a program, about 8 weeks ago now, where we're reaching out to our community members and our customers and receiving donations for, I apologize, apparently this is the Trape Academy 2020 senior graduate parade going by me right now.
Of course it is.
Congratulations. But anyway, so we're seeking donations, and from that money that we're raising, we're able to put a bag of meat. Basically, it's 3 meals per person, and we hand them out to out-of-work restaurant staff. We've also expanded it to service industry folks of any kind, including nurses and doctors who may have been laid off recently. So it's going incredibly well. We are so fortunate, and we right now are positioned to hand out about 30 bags every week for the next 10 weeks.
Oh, great. And how are you doing that? Do you have a jar on the counter when your customers come, or how is this working?
No, we've been closed down since the 16th of March. We're just strictly curbside pre-order only. So on our website, there is a link to a store that you can purchase butcher bags. They're $20 increments, and they go, you can buy one, you can buy half of one. You don't have to buy a whole one. You can do it right online.
All right. Well, Shannon, thanks for calling in. As I think you've heard me say, we're going to try to develop today's Facebook post into a resource. So if you put more information into the comment section on the Maine Calling Facebook post, I'd really appreciate it. That's Shannon Hill. She is co-owner of Maine Meat in Kittery. We'll go to Cumberland and Carol. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, Jennifer. Thanks so much. I'm calling from Cumberland. I'd like to just compliment the town on how well they are doing in keeping residents abreast of what's going on throughout the town. But also in my neighborhood right here in Cumberland Center, we have what's called the Cup of Sugar Brigade. And all the neighbors are on the email link. So we stay in touch. Someone saw a fox in the neighborhood and do that. And it's really gotten more, a little bit more intense. There are wonderful neighbors doing shopping for those of us that can't get out or it would be dangerous for us to do so. And another neighbor, example, had extra seedlings for tomatoes and sent out an email saying, I've got some tomato seedlings at the end of the driveway. Come pick them up if anyone wants them. And all those kinds of things. Just staying so that we're connected and not alone. Get out and walk, distancing, but just seeing neighbors and waving and saying hi, just in a small way that I think there's lots of folks in the state that are doing exactly this kind of thing. I just want to acknowledge that to folks doing
that. Carol, I really appreciate it. You talked about the Cup of Sugar Brigade. How do you all connect with one another? Is it through social media like Facebook or is it on email or how does it work?
It's email, email and telephone. It's a relatively small neighborhood, all dead-end streets right off of Main Street in Cumberland. And we all, stay in touch. Some neighbors I've seen once or twice, over the years. But, we are just connected. And anyone in need, just put out the word and someone will come. Oh, my dog needs a walk, needs someone to walk it, and do it in course in a safe. Everyone wears face masks.
Carol, it's so interesting to me to hear you say this. Oh, she's gone. I wanted to ask Carol, and maybe I'll ask you, Phil. Mm-hmm. I know that one of the things that I've encountered over the years is that sometimes people are hesitant to ask for help. And it sounds from what Carol has said that people are more willing to actually let it be known when they might need the cup of sugar or their dog being walked or something else. Are you finding that as well, that sort of the hesitance of asking for help is coming down a little bit?
Well, I think that's always true when there's such a high level of need that that happens. But what I'm seeing more than people feeling more comfortable asking is people feeling more comfortable reaching out to help. And the sense that we're all in this together, and we have to check on our neighbors, and we can't just assume that everybody is fine. And I mean, I really appreciated what Carol said, and basically what all the callers have said. There's so much ingenuity, so much compassion and empathy in our community, and this is a time when we're really drawing on those characteristics. And I feel like That's a silver lining in a difficult time.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of, I've got some more emails. This one, Perry from Little Lambda Books. Our latest book, Iris and the Virus, is intended to help kids understand the coronavirus pandemic. It is written by a Maine author, and we are a small Maine publisher. We are donating all profits from this book to the Maine Community Foundation's COVID-19 Fund. The book is intended to help children cope with the massive changes in our world right now. It is our hope that it might give grown-ups a tool to assist with some important conversations. It tells the story of Iris, a child who is struggling with the changes brought by the coronavirus pandemic. Dad comforts her and explains what is happening and why. He helps her adapt to her new routine and shows her how she can do her part to help. This book was conceived, written, illustrated, and published in 2 weeks from our home. So congratulations to you, Perry. We'll try to get more information about Iris and the Virus onto our Facebook page and our webpage. Darla on Facebook sounds a lot like our caller from Cumberland. Darla says, Troy, Maine neighbors formed on Facebook and provide check-ins, information, and care packages to neighbors. We'd love to hear what's happening in your neighborhood or your community. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address talk@mainpublic.org. tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Marshall Communications. With its new ebook, 10 Crisis Communications Tips for Small Businesses During COVID-19, MarshallPR.com. And the University of Maine at Augusta, committed to providing a quality, affordable education online and in the classroom, UMA.edu. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On May 8, 1980, Rumford native Edmund Muskie was confirmed by the United States Senate by a vote of 94-2 as the 58th United States Secretary of State. In late April of 1980, Muskie was tapped by President Jimmy Carter to serve as Secretary of State following the resignation of Cyrus Vance. Vance had opposed Operation Eagle Claw, a secret rescue mission intended to rescue American hostages held by Iran. After that mission failed with the loss of 8 U.S. servicemen, Vance resigned.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Roosevelt Campobello International Park and the Island Institute. Happy birthday, Maine! The Daily Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus is scheduled to take place at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and Governor Mills is expected to join Dr. Shaw at today's briefing. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, each day's address is archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and Governor Mills at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you are listening to Maine Calling. We're talking about ways to help and ways people are helping during this crisis. On the line with us, Phil Walsh with Maine Initiatives. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. And today, even more than ever, we're trying to use that Facebook page as a place that people can share information about some of these ideas, these initiatives, these resources. So you go to facebook.com/Maine Calling, and today's post is already started to pick up lots of comments and ideas. We'd love to have you post one there, and be sure and put either a link to a web page or a phone number. Let people know how they can help if they want to help your initiative. Calling in now is Nate Barr, who is a mechanical engineer and founder of Zootility based in Portland. Thanks so much for joining us, Nate.
Thanks for having me on.
I think a lot of people know about your kind of famous first big seller, the Pocket Monkey. I understand that started your business. Now you've invented something new that's in response to the pandemic. Tell us about it.
Well, it's called Careful Key, and it lets you avoid touching doorknobs when you're out in public. We're trying to socially distance and work from home as much as possible, but you have to go out occasionally for food or things. And if you come across a door handle, like whether it be the ATM or going into the bank, and there's no way to open it with your elbow or your foot, you end up grabbing it with your hand and kind of cringing as you do it. So this tool lets you use a little finger ring with a hook on it to latch onto the door and pull it open. You can attach it to your keychain. So if you hang it on the outside of your purse, bag, pockets, it's not even, you know, being held for very long. It's made out of antimicrobial brass. So even if you don't get a chance to clean it with a sanitizer, it'll self-sanitize in 4 hours. But I think most importantly is just that it reduces the contact area. You're only touching 1% of the area that your hand would touch if you grabbed a hold of the door.
All right. I'm guessing here, but I want to ask you, has the Careful Key helped you keep your business going during this pandemic?
Oh, it's been a wild ride. Just like everybody, things changed dramatically middle of March. We watched our revenue fall 95% in 1 week. And I looked at what had happened in China and what they had done in order to be able to get back on track, and realized there was really no way in America that we could pull that off. You know, we're not a communist regime. So I very quickly moved to reduce our staff level to try to match what little revenue we could maintain. We focused on consumers, products that consumers would want. But we dropped down to just 4 people at one point. And now with the sales of this, we're back up to 9.
Oh, wonderful. I'm so happy to hear about that. And thanks so much for calling in, Nate. That's Nate Barr, the founder of Zootility and the most recent invention, the Careful Key. I appreciate it. We're going to go to Patty, who's calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Patty. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Thanks for doing this. It's a really fun program today. And you can hear me okay?
Yeah, a little soft, but go ahead.
That's
good.
Okay, good. My main thing is I wanted to do a huge, huge enthusiastic shout out to our local library. Thomas Memorial Library here in Cape has, I'm an elder law attorney here in Cape. I'm just starting as a side project. I'm working on connecting seniors, totally side project, but I'm so interested in this area. I'm connecting seniors with younger folks who could use their advice. So I contacted our library and I was blown away because they already had some activities in this area underway that they do all this under the radar, very humbly, I would say. And so they already had some projects underway where they're connecting elders with younger people. Because they were interested in doing that, they'd already formed liaison with our local high school to kind of replace what the high school had been doing, which was a senior-to-senior project to keep seniors in the high school involved in the lives and helping local people in the community who were older seniors. And so they're doing all this amazing work connecting people, and I wasn't even aware until I just had my own little project going and tapped in. And then saw all the things they're offering online. So they're doing like coffee shops in the morning to connect people, FICA. They're doing, all online, of course, COVID proper. They're doing an eldering class for people to get together and just share concerns and, you know, and reach out to each other.
Thank you so much for calling in. And I'm sure librarians all over the state are cheering for you right now, because I know that many libraries have sort of kicked into gear to try to figure out ways they can serve their community, even though the doors are closed. Patty, thanks so much for calling. An email from Linda with the Yarmouth Arts Alliance. Linda writes, there will be a front yard plein air art share from 10 to 3 on Sunday, May 10th, Mother's Day, all over Yarmouth. Artists will be showing their work in their front yards. We suggest people ride around town or walk and social distance and wear a mask if walking. We hope to bring a lot of sunshine to people's faces. From 10 to 3 in Yarmouth, a front yard plein air art share. An email from Barbara. Down East Hospice Volunteers is the only volunteer hospice service serving all of Washington County. We have an annual certified race, a 10K or 5K run walk. It's our 29th year. It brings people from all over the Eastern Seaboard. We have not canceled the event for 2020. Instead, we have morphed this event into a safe, fun event. We want people to continue to support Down East Hospice Volunteers by being able to participate without any gathering and in their own backyard on an honor system. This change enables people from all over the country to participate this year. And an email from Margaret. I would like to bring to your attention a meal sharing program that is occurring out of, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Camp Michuana's Kitchen in Winthrop, Maine. The organization is helping people in need when their usual role of providing camping experiences can't happen because of COVID-19. The camp's executive director heard about children needing food in the area and figured out with other community members how to provide that food. Many people have sent in needed paper supplies and have volunteered to help. Thanks so much for telling us about that. I'm going to go here to Catherine calling from Hollowell. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you today, Jennifer? Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm calling from the Maine Tourism Association, and we are a industry group that represents different tourism-related businesses throughout the state of Maine, and charity is not usually our thing that we do, but we were actually approached by Poland Spring about 4 weeks ago, and they wanted to create a tourism relief fund. So we've been working in partnership with them to create the Maine Tourism Relief Fund, which is specifically for small businesses with less than 50 people in the tourism sector, and also their employees and anyone who's self-employed in that sector. And this is our week that we're doing our grant applications. They close at 5 p.m. today, but if anybody wants to get one in before the end of the day today, we'd love to review them. They're $1,000 grants for the small businesses, and then $500 for individuals or the self-employed. And it's been a crazy run. I mean, setting this up it would usually take a year, and we've done it in about 4 weeks, but we've been really excited to do it partnership with lots of other partners.
Catherine, thank you so much for calling in, and good luck reviewing those applications. Thank you so much. She's from the Maine Tourism Association. Going to move quickly to Elsa. Elsa, we're almost out of time, so if you could be quick, that would be great.
Okay.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Please do this again, this show. I mean, seriously, we all need it. I just wanted to say that my clients and my Facebook friends participated in a fundraising effort on my part, and I was able to raise $1,000. And I contacted Holy Donuts, and they donated a baker's dozen donuts. And Rwanda Bean Coffee in South Portland also donated coffee, and I was able to deliver 500 donuts to Maine Med and to Southern Maine Healthcare. And I got the most amazing text from the COVID nurse on the ward. And she said she was so exhausted and so tired. And having that when she came out of the room was just amazing.
People well, Elsa, just, thank you so much. Thanks for your creativity and thanks for calling in. Try to read really quickly a couple emails here from Lenny. I live in a very small rural town in Oxford County. My contribution has been to make face masks for anyone who asks. In return, I ask that they donate to a local charitable cause, such as homelessness, veterans' needs, and hunger prevention. We have a wonderful organization, RCAM, Rural Community Action Ministry, which has opened a food stand where people can go to get fresh produce. So thank you. He's from Hartford, the town of Hartford, he says, a wonderful community. And then Rebecca on Facebook writes, the Frank Knight Foundation has been posting information about trees in our town, a tree a week, right on the tree so that people can learn about them, maybe use them from homeschooling, give people ways to connect as they spend more time walking on our neighborhood streets. We used the elm tree yesterday so people can relate to how a pandemic struck that species but has survived. We also post a daily sunset song and post it on the Yarmouth Task Force page. All these creative ideas, Phil Walsh, you haven't been able to get many words in. Wondering if you have some final thoughts in this last minute of the program.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, this is so inspiring. I love hearing all the stories. And I think the thing that I would say is, as is evidenced by this show, we all can do something. Everybody can do something. And not all of us can donate money. Not all of us can bake food and deliver it. But all of us can reach out to somebody that we know and say, I'm thinking of you. I miss you. I love you. And that's enough sometimes. So I just want to encourage, I'm just inspired by all the different things that people are doing, the ingenuity, and I just want to encourage everybody to think, what is one thing, one step that they can do to support somebody and to help out, because I think that's really what we all need right now.
Well, Phil, thanks so much for joining us for the hour. Philip Walsh, Executive Director of Maine Initiatives. I'll say it one more time. If you have something you want to tell other people about, why don't you go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/MaineCalling. In today's post, just leave your information under the comment section. You'll see a list is already underway. Thank you all for joining us today. Lucy Suchek ran the board. Our theme music composed by Mike Jandro. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Stay tuned for the latest update from Governor Janet Mills and CDC Director Nirav Shah. Commissioners Jean Lambrew and Heather Johnson will join them. That's coming up in just a few minutes here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television and at the Maine Public website. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.